How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Time for the building segment of the program. Joining us from just south of the Dallas-Fort Worth area is Mike Musselman.
West.
I thought it was south.
No, we're west.
Are you sure?
Yeah, last time I looked.
I'll take your word for it. Last I checked, you were fairly decent with the compass. So give us the latest on the building project.
So I went by Bucks yesterday for some pointers, and so he likes the design. He gave me some things to think about to simplify the design, make it overly complicated.
Big screen TV? Did he give you that?
No. You know, Buck was a cabinet maker at one time.
You know what? He told me that. He's done a lot of stuff with his hands in his life, and so So what were the ideas in terms of simplifying?
Instead of doing dadoing out the drawers, just do butt joints, you know, where I cut out the bottom and then glue and screw it into the sides. The butt joint is just as strong, if not stronger, than a dado joint.
Got it. Anything else?
And then, again, how to simplify the stringers. You know, so instead of making one complete stringer, all three cabinets, do individual and then just butt them up together so that way I can get a better estimate. A better judgment on individual cabinets instead of groups of three on the bottom. But other than that, yeah, he wants me to go with a melanine tabletop.
What's that mean?
It's that wood. It's got the thick layer. It's got the layer of like it's kind of hard to explain. It's that smooth, white, almost like a plastic surface on the wood, particle board. You'll find it in like storage things and stuff like that. Instead of MDF, because MDF, like you said, if you drop something on it, it's going to have a dent in it. It'll dent it because it's not that hard of a wood. So I'll look at a new tabletop.
So are you
just real wood and then put a...
I like wood.
An epoxy on it?
Yeah.
Resin? Yeah.
Right. Especially in the garage, it looks good.
Yeah, you know what? And more that you think about that, that'd be pretty nice, huh? If I just went with the real wood, stained it, and then put a rail around it, maybe like an eighth of an inch, and then poured some clear epoxy and let it just harden on top.
Yeah. I like the look. To me, wood is, it always looks good.
I got an idea.
What's that?
So, you know the challenge coins that I got?
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll make it as thick and then put my challenge coins in there and then embed those in epoxy.
Wow.
But then that means if I do ever, for some reason, ever move to Mississippi.
which is one day closer than yesterday. So
the garage cabinets will be going with me.
They have to. Or else you got to find another gunner to buy your house.
Yeah.
What the side, the coin that would be facing outboard, the coin doesn't have your name.
No, I have a couple of my own personal coins that I had built that I have left, but they're all coins that were given to me for various units or individuals working with them.
Yeah. You know what? This is kind of ghetto, but I have mine on my refrigerator. I went and got
magnet tape?
Yeah, kind of silicone, and with those super, super strong magnets. And so I have them from all the people that have given them to me over the years.
Dude, I'd need two refrigerators.
What's that?
I would need two refrigerators.
I know.
You see my coins?
I only come in the door. I know. Mike's got
four large. They're like four very large cabinet with glass fronts with shelves, and they're full. And I could probably open a basket to do another one that I just never got around to.
Yeah. So I have. Then I've got a few more of them.
That I haven't used yet.
So, anyway. So the cabinets are. When do you think you'll begin the construction phase of all this?
That's hard, tough to say. Probably when it gets a little nicer out, when the garage it's not so cold in the garage.
Doing construction during the cold weather is not good. Don't do it. Just say no.
No. And plus, you know, the truck's got to. Once I start the construction, the truck's going to be out of the garage until the construction's over with.
Oh, the new truck. I forgot.
And, yeah.
That's a big deal.
Well, it's just, and then.
A lot of moving pieces for this thing.
Yeah, it is, man. But it's going to come. This dream will come to fruition. It will be a reality.
It will.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've done too much. I've invested too much in my drawings.
I'm committed to the drawing. Therefore,
I see this through now. I got to see what it looks like.
If I hadn't spent so much time on the drawing, then that would be one thing. But because I've spent so much time on the drawing, it now has to happen. And that's the way thing goes. Look, I don't even really want to do it, but I have so much time invested in the drawing, I have to do it. Don't you understand? Yeah, that's the way this stuff works. The Scott Como on again. He paints a picture of a really cool Marine Corps. Now I'd have to give it some thought, but smaller amphibious ships maybe have, you know, less than a company size organization on it. Ordnance for you to control fires, limited capability for fires, and also, you know, drones based off your little amphib, and then you're deployed, man. You're deployed to the Philippines, you're deployed to Vietnam, you're deployed, you know, in the vicinity of the South China Sea, and you control, right? You control cyber ops, you control. It's the whole concept, the reality of the strategic corporal, sergeant, whoever, and mm-hmm. And how that works. So it's an interesting conversation, but trying to solve how do you get the Marine Corps to war and how do you get it to be on the list of forces selected when something acts up and you say, yeah, they've got all those missiles, we put them on big boats, and we're going to get them all killed. How do we get them there? We can't. Oh, okay, so they're not on the list of forces. So how do you, relative to this now peer-to-peer war thing, but if you can envision that, Mike, if you can imagine you being like Staff Sergeant Musselman with your boat and with your all your shit, that would be a fun job, man.
You know, but we've talked about this, you know, and I would say the Marine Corps missed an opportunity to metamorphose into something that was more relevant than it was today and kind of get away from this amphibious doctrine, you know, that we can sole existence on and kind of form out to be something much better than what we ever came, but give the country a more capable force. And like Scott said, you know, when we talked about SOCOM, you know, SOCOM, they have a lot of capabilities, but still they don't have quite the capabilities that the Marine Corps has when it comes to what it could have changed into. And it could have been that force, that gap, and we could have been a lot more relevant. We could have been in every climate place. But I think, again, we missed that opportunity.
People are afraid, so, though, because when you talk about, like, when you say, okay, when you come off, like, 38 amphibs, which is the institutional position, right?
Right.
Right, and say, okay, look.
Oh. Yeah,
exactly. We'll trade 13 of those amphibs for 40 of these ships. What? Yeah. How about that? We'll do it for half the personnel and half the cost.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. And we will be
right? It's and when you talk about forward deployed, you're not talking about sitting at Camp Hansen or sitting at Camp Schwab or being part of the Darwin Rotational Force. You're talking about being in Vietnam, being in the Philippines, being in Indonesia, forward base partnering with logistics there, working out of there. And then you begin to think of that, and you kind of begin, as a Marine, you begin to salivate, like, whoa, man, that's awesome. In your own little, like, running, you're being relevant, right? Right now, they're there controlling those things, so pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know all the bugs, but you can see, though, you can see, you know, how exciting that stuff is. So very cool, very cool, very cool. Yeah, I can imagine you with your boat cloak on and your helmet, like on the bow of the ship. Forward, men, let's go.
Yeah,
that was
too bad. Yeah. Now the fight continues for existence and capabilities.
Well, when do you think the Marine Corps could have done that, given its commitments over the last 17 years?
Right after 2003, when the insurgent stuff started popping up.
That we could have embraced what?
We could. I don't know if the word asymmetrical warfare would have been. We could have aligned ourselves more into that realm. But yeah, I think what we missed was, again, we missed the opportunity to do more operations that weren't in the ballywick of conventional forces, that were more in the SOCOM stuff. Where we could have done, I mean, look at all of the SOCOM, you know, FID. Shit, Marine Corps has been doing FID forever. So
explain FID.
Foreign intervention. So working with foreign governments, foreign militaries, embedding with them, training. It could be anything from intel gathering, training, you know, all that stuff, but it's not hands-on. It's not direct operations. You're not kicking down doors. Well, you're not claiming that you are.
Exactly. Oh, what? Who? No, that wasn't enough.
We could have done, again, we could have put platoons, you know, and I don't know what that number, 45 to 65 guys, into regions and been QRF for, because we did it in little small places, but it was for the wrong reasons. Like when we did the Oman thing, the Yemen thing.
Right.
You know, all they did was they were glorified guards. You know, while we were guarding a hotel and a makeshift embassy.
Right.
The special forces guys were out there snatching guys up.
Zooming around. Yep.
Different
rules. So they operate under a cloak of
why can't we can operate under the same rules. It's just someone giving us the capability to do that.
I agree. And let me tell you, and to me, the harder job, when you operate under the cloak, right, there is security there. When you go and you set into an embassy and a hotel and you become sitting duck man, that's hard, man. You have to be 24/7. You better be hyper vigilant or somebody will break it off in your ass. And,
So when you look at SF guys, when you pull them apart and you separate them, you know, we make fun of it when we in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, what's the difference between an SF unit and a Marine Corps platoon? Train. You know, at the same time, I mean, everybody has the same time. It's 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. They're not more time. They're just focusing their training. And then it's resources. What's resources do they have? So if you give a Marine Corps rifle squad the same resources, now they have national assets when it comes to air, you know, intel gathering, and you give them those type of things, you can perform those same missions. I could take a Marine Corps rifle squad and go and do a direct action mission against a high-value target. No doubt.
A lot of people are will be surprised to hear you say that. Oh, he's just talking shit.
No, they're again, it's training. I focus my training on that. You focus your training with the Marine Corps Rifle Squad, they can achieve just about anything. And so when we because we were doing, you know, when you look at some of the missions, we were doing the same stuff. We had DEA guys operating with Marine Corps rifle squads doing counter drug missions in foreign countries. We had Marine Corps rifle squads in South Central and South America doing FID missions. We had a lot of this stuff, and it came down to gear. That's how you knew the separation.
Right.
Yeah. The Secret Squirrels got better gear.
Oh, my God.
I give the better gear to the Marine Corps Rifle Squad, you're not going to know the difference.
And again, you've heard Mike say it, and then you've heard General Furness talk about times when, you know, a mission would come down to, you know, target so empty frats is in Nasser Wa Salam or is in Faris Amariya. Go yoke them up. Hey, well, our guys are two blocks away. Do you want us to do it?
No, we just had tea with them. We'll just go grab them. We'll have tea again, and this time we'll just take them with us.
No, we want to blow a hole, another hole in the wall there, and move through, and we'll get them. Okay. Well, just so you know, our guys can laser blaze it for you, just in case you get lost again. Hey, appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, I remember the first time I saw the package that those guys rolled in with. What? He's like shit you would get for like
16 16 dudes, you get two Apaches, a CH-47, right. Two Blackhawks, you know, as your secondary exfil.
Right.
You get an AC-130,
Vision
of Air.
A section of air, two F-16s overheads, just loitering, and then you get the other thing that was really when Mike and I were in Fallujah in 2006 was they would get both shooting drones and
reconnaissance drones.
Yeah, listening special drones.
And right. They even got Global Hawk stuff, so stuff that was in the stratosphere listening to communication.
Right. So you would see they'd come to you with this slide, right? So our job was, like, I would call 3-5 and said, hey, you know, this special team is going to hit this guy at this time. I need you to QRF it. I'll push you all the information. And then they would say, Roger, got it. And then they would have to send me back. It's these guys on this frequency. They can talk to them here. They've got everything. They're standing, and they had to be sitting on their gear. You got to sit on your gear to be able to go to help these guys. Okay. So that's what, and then you see the slide that they send, and you're just like, shit, man.
Right.
Wow. And that's why I say, if you did this as your job, and you saw everything they had, you know, there's not, how do I say this right? Mike, correct me if I'm wrong. The risk associated with those hits, those operations, is really low because the assets they have and their ability to watch. They don't go till they decide to go, right?
Right.
And the assets they have, they're watching everybody in the house. And they've got people talking to you. He just moved to the left window, right? He's in window number two. It looks like he's looking south. That's the kind of... Now, take a Marine rifle squad. Take what Jeremiah Workman did that day. He and his mortar section working a block with nobody in the world watching. And so
they did it the hard way.
Yeah, that's the hard way. The hard way is Lance Corporal going down the street, right, World War II style, World War I style, Civil War style, right, with your eyeballs and your rifle and your cohorts behind you. And so, again, not to diminish in any way, shape, or form what Special Forces guys do.
No, they do great things.
But I think what they've done is they have blazed the trail of where the American military in particular needs to go. Because I think that given the state of technology, and in particular the lethality of modern munitions in a peer-to-peer contest, if that's what we're talking about, if you're in the same grid square, they will annihilate you. And so you've got to be dispersed.
I just don't think that, you know, when we look at Marines operating as battalions and regiments and, you know, MEBs and stuff like that, I don't know.
A thing of the past?
Yeah, I think it's a thing of the past.
You could do it against a non-near peer, right? You can do it against somebody who's on their ass that you can go over and roll on.
That's what the Army's there for.
Yeah, but there's not enough of them.
Well, yeah, there is. There's enough Army guys. Well, they're just all discombobulated right now.
Send them all then? Yeah, because what this envisions the Marine Corps is the Marine Corps forward deployed.
Yeah, constantly forward deployed.
Constantly forward deployed. Yeah. So that you would, when you sign up, you're going to be gone. So it's kind of interesting, kind of cool. And again, I just have this vision of these, like commanding a company, right? And the company is spread out over, I don't know, 400 miles. And it's got four of these fast attack amphibs. And you're hauling ass all over the place. Speed is part of your security, right? You have, you know, these new MOSs, right? These new infantry MOSs that, you know, that do these different things. You have swarming drones. You have EW. You have all this stuff. And you're out doing your thing.
The companies could operate over COCOMs. And then the battalion commander or the battalion headquarters of that, the commander and everything, would be a liaison that would lay down into those COCOMs,
right,
as the employment guys.
Right.
But no one wants to be, you know, it's like, man, you should try and sell that to the Marine Corps that battalion commanders are going to lose the word commanding and basically be liaison officers.
Wait a minute. Where's my boat? You don't have a boat, sir. Okay.
Yeah, you're in this headquarters in Stuttgart, Germany.
Never, I can't hide the coat. What do we do with the regimental colors? That stays at Pendleton.
Yeah, or you put them in the Marine Corps Museum.
Yeah. Oh, shit, man. Come on. Don't even go there. But
why?
No, that's the kind of stuff you're talking about, though. That kind of, because again, you just can't show me how this happens. You know, in fact, Scott said some really interesting stuff, like 83% of China's oil comes through the Malaccan Straits.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Oops, sorry, boys. We just wrecked the Malaccan Straits. Not sure where you're going to get your oil now. We'll bring it from Sri Lanka overland. Oh, good luck, because we'll just blow the shit out of that four of those passes, and you ain't going to get shit through there, let alone to run your economy. Oh, damn, I hate when the Americans do this kind of bullshit. So I would think that China would have more kind of...
You know what's interesting about China? I watched a special the other day. Uh-huh. They're doing... what it is China is cornering the market in electric cars. They are the number one competitor towards...
No more petroleum?
Well, that's where they know they need to go. They need to put all their efforts into everything they do into electrical because they know that that's where they're going. So who's still the big electrical group now here in the United States?
I don't know.
Yeah, they're right there in California.
Tesla.
So they're competing. They're catching up to Tesla. And China has over a million Chinese-made electric cars on the roads in China today. You know, they've gone from, Bob could probably talk about this, you know, where they go from everybody on a bicycle to now you look at them, everybody's driving a car. I mean, it wasn't too long ago, it was in my lifetime, that every Chinese person had a bicycle. Now we're talking about superhighways, you know. And, you know, so they're going through the industrial age. I mean, it's just they're going through so much. I mean, raw resources from concrete to you know, steel to, you name it. They're just absorbing that stuff at a tremendous rate.
Right.
And we thought not too long ago that they wouldn't sustain that type of, growth. Should they surpassed where we thought they were going to fall out.
Well, and the other thing we thought was that by bringing them into the World Trade Organization, blah, 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 as they integrated with the rest of the world, that they would not be as communist as they would become a moderate.
They're capitalists.
they would become a moderate communist, and they haven't. They are now, their vision is now to shape the world into a Chinese vision and not join the rest of the world in this rules-based order. And that's
they're a meld of capitalism and communism. So I don't know where they're, but I mean, to say that there's no capitalist over there, no, there's capitalists over there. There's billionaires, and they're not state-owned. The guy who runs the largest electric car company.
Everything is state-owned, Mike.
Well, no, the guy who owns the largest electrical thing was a freaking farmer. When he was the son of a farmer, had nothing. Went to university, started doing this, and now he's worth $6.6 billion. And so, yeah, he's not state-owned, but he's state-controlled.
There you go. Well, again, anybody who works there, right? So if Allmarin Radio wanted to start a Chinese counterpart, I would have to go find a Chinese business that would partner with me. I would have to transfer all my technology to the Chinese company, and they would jointly own it. And that's how the Chinese achieve all that they've achieved. And so, I mean, it's very interesting when you listen to Scott Cuomo talk about I don't think Russia, I've talked about this, but to me Russia's faking it. I mean, did you see them released their target list of cities in the United States yesterday? Like Dr. Evil's at it again. Like, all right, look, we got the memo. But, backing out of that, the whole reason to back out of the intermediate range nuclear treaty with the Russians is to negotiate another one, to have the Chinese be a part of the next one, because that's who you need, right? Because the Russians are faking it. They can't sustain it. Their GDP is 6% of American GDP. 6%. The Chinese is 60% and going up. And so, the one you need to have the treaty with is the Chinese. And then we'll let Dr. Evil do his thing and all that. So, but it is really interesting. I think it's really fascinating for the Marine Corps in terms of the future. Because the day of the amphib, Mike, make a case. How the hell do you get, how do you get a MEB into the region on ships to do something? Given the lethality of missile technology now. Hard.
Yeah, I don't like the word lethality. The capability of missile technology.
Yeah, given the capabilities of missile technology, so before you can move them, you've got to blow out all their satellites and all their ability to do target collection, and targeting. You have to poke their eyes out, or else you can't move them because you can't afford to lose those assets. Can you imagine if you lost, like, we just lost two regiments of the 1st Marine Division sunk, in the Northern Pacific as they transited. What?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I just looked at that target list. Good thing Texas is not in there. Nothing in California is either, though.
McClellan Air Force Base. It was like BRAC'd in 2000.
Oh, the one I'm looking at doesn't have McClellan.
The one today that had McClellan on it. I was like, come on, boys, you need to update that target list. I don't know who your fires guys are, but you got to kick somebody in the ass because McClellan got bracked in 2001.
Yeah, it's gone, boys. What an embarrassment. Maybe that's just the whole, that's what they're just putting out there. That's not their actual truth.
No, that's what I think it is. Look, he's just, first of all, here's what's bad for Putin. We back out of the treaty. He says, I will target America. Weren't you targeting America before? Hey, tell him to shut up, okay? Yes, I was. Okay, so you were targeting before. So you're going to publish the list of targets? Yes. right, can I start guessing where you're going to target? No, no, this is designed for information operations. Shut your yap. Okay. So now we're going to say, okay, we're going to produce more, and our European partners, some of them will produce more, which means the Russians have to produce more, which means they need hard currency to do this stuff, which they don't do very well because they got a tiny economy. So that's what. So Putin, he's got to get out there and put his good suit on and puff his chest out and say, yes, I will destroy Fresno, not just Los Angeles. That's right. And Binghamton, it's going to.
Well, Fresno needs to be nuked. That's the only hope for it.
Fresno, all those cities in the Central Valley, man, that's like rough living. If you look at like worst places to live in the United States.
Yeah, Stockton, Modesto, Fresno.
Merced.
What's the B? What's the one right after
Bakersfield.
The, Bakersfield. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you'd meet Marines.
I'd rather drive to West Texas than take that route again, down the 5.
Hold on, let me see. Worst places to live in the United States. 10 worst places to live. Let's see.
Bakersfield's got to be in there.
I got to find a credible. USA Today, quality of life. These are the 50 worst cities to live in the United States. USA Today, credible, yes. All right, why don't we do the bottom 10 of the bottom 50? All right. Number 10. I'll give you some hints. Oh, shit. Number 10. Wow. It's got a baseball team. It's in Wisconsin.
Green Bay?
Milwaukee.
Really?
Yeah. More than 1 in 4 Milwaukee residents live in poverty. More than double the 12% state poverty rate. Number 9 has a baseball team in the state of Maryland.
I see a trend here. That's got to be number 9, you said?
Number 9.
Is it on the East Coast or West Coast?
It's within the state of Maryland. That would be...
Oh, Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore. Baltimore's median annual income is $47,350, is the lowest of any city in Maryland. The city's poor households face additional strain because of the high cost of living. Goods and services are about 12% more expensive in Baltimore than they are nationwide on the average. Baltimore. Number 8, Springfield, Missouri, as opposed to Springfield, Illinois, which is home.
I would have never guessed Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was a city. Number
what do they put up on there for violent crimes?
Along with St. Louis, Springfield is one of Missouri's cities that ranked among the worst cities to live in. As is also the case in St. Louis, crime detracts considerably. Good call. Number 7, this is a Marine Corps city, Albany, Georgia.
I can see that.
I've never been.
No jobs.
Number 6, Wilmington, Delaware.
Really?
Low income, high cost of living. Number 5, Cleveland.
Yes.
One of the poorest cities in the country. 35% poverty rate, 7% jobless rate, second highest of any city in the state. The city is also dangerous. Number 4, Memphis, Tennessee.
Really? I would have never said that one.
Serious financial hardship.
That's just going to be poverty. It's the same thing.
High crime rate. Detract from the overall quality of life.
St. Louis has got to be in there then, if that's the case.
Shut your yap. You're a loser.
What?
I know. What? Number 3.
No, I mean, you're talking to all this stuff.
Shut up. Quit doing this to me. You play this.
Oh, my God. I can't believe. You... Oh, okay.
So the next city is, survey says, St. Louis.
Oh!
How did you guess that? That was unbelievable. Holy shit.
And then I would say my best guess.
Karnak says, number 2.
Probably somewhere in Michigan, like Flint,
Oh my God. Unbelievable. Flint is the second worst city to live in both Michigan and in the United States. Well, if Flint's the second worst, then what?
Detroit's got to be number one.
And what does Detroit have in common with Baltimore, Milwaukee, St. Louis? Got a baseball team.
Got a baseball team.
The poster child of America's post-industrial urban decline. Well, you know what? It's appropriate because Detroit was the poster child for America's industrial urban incline, right? With all those motor companies, those car companies in Detroit, Dearborn, all those, the United Auto Workers. Man,
once home to 1.8 million residents, now fewer than 700,000.
In Detroit?
Yeah.
Last one out. Shut the lights off. Yeah, they went through the whole bankruptcy thing.
Okay, so let's see. Oh, you know who made the list?
What?
Florence Graham, California.
Yeah, you're looking for California cities. Hartford, Connecticut. Homestead, Florida.
San Francisco, California.
Where is Florence Graham? I don't even know where it is. Never even heard of it.
I don't know.
San Bernardino. That's out Riverside.
San Bernardino made it.
Youngstown, Ohio. Rockford, Illinois. I'm looking
at Pueblo, Colorado. Yeah, that's a dead city.
Gary, Indiana. That Gary, Indiana is murder capital of the country for many years.
Oh, Compton, number 20.
And the home of the Jackson 5. They were born and raised in Gary. Compton. That's right. Straight out of Compton.
24. There we go.
Shreveport, Louisiana.
We knew it. We knew we weren't far off.
Charleston, West Virginia. Daytona Beach. Stockton.
Okay, here we go. Remember that we were talking about the cities in the Kent Valley? Stockton, 24. Merced, 26.
Oakdale.
Oakland.
That's not
Oakland, 27, top of the.
Oakland is kind of the, like, it's the asshole of the Bay Area, right?
Fresno, 32.
Tucson, 31. That's surprising me. I didn't think Tucson. Canton, Ohio. Buffalo, New York. This is bottom 50. Whoa. Toledo. Knoxville. Kalamazoo, Michigan, home of Derek Jeter. Tallahassee, Florida. New Haven. South Bend, Indiana, home of Notre Dame. What the hell is going on? Violent crime and cost of living. North Charleston. Charleston is supposed to be a great town.
Texas didn't even have a city on the list, man. Boo!
I thought
Houston would be in there, but nope.
Neither did Minnesota. Houston got cleaned out, man.
Yeah.
Atlanta, Gainesville, Salt Lake City.
I know, I saw that.
The Mormons aren't going to be pleased with old USA Today, bro. I'm not lying about that. That's not the way the Mormons roll. Let's see. Worst places to live in Texas. Let's see what they say. The 10 worst places to live in Texas. I'm not going to tell you who wrote this, so you can't go look at the article. In 2019, number one. What? Progreso, Texas is number 10. You know, you ever heard of Progreso, Texas?
No.
Terrell, Texas. You ever heard of Terrell?
Yeah.
Humble, Texas. You ever heard of Humble? Donna, Texas.
No. These are like spots on the map.
Arkansas Pass, Texas.
No. These are like I said, they're all
Arkansas
like
Pass. The reason Arkansas Pass is on the list, it has two animal carcasses that have been in the highway for at least 2 months. Oh, you guys need to get on your animal. If you would legalize eating roadkill, then you would not have that issue.
In Arkansas Pass, they probably do, man.
Palm View, Robstown, Hutchings, Port Arthur's. I've heard of Port Arthur.
Yeah, I know Port Arthur. So.
And Cleveland is the worst city in Texas to live in. How we got to this. We don't think it's a stretch to assume that people like the following things: good education, jobs, low crime, low poverty, nice homes, high incomes, high population density, which is an indicator of things to do, short work commutes, and health insurance. So that's how they went about compiling this list. Well, that's interesting.
Interesting.
If you, other than Granbury,
some of those would be out towards. Other than what?
Other than living in Granbury, did you consider any place else in Texas to live?
Yeah, we actually did. We looked at Liberty Hill.
Where's that?
It's north of Austin. It's about 45 minutes out of Austin.
Yeah, people say good things about Austin. UT is there. People say good things about San Antonio.
Yeah, they're, I mean, they're big. They're big cities.
And you did you ultimately is opt for smaller?
Like Liberty Hill and stuff like that, that's out in the country still. We looked at Georgetown, Liberty Hill. They're real close to each other. North of Fort Worth, like up north of Keller, but then that, I'm glad that we didn't pick that because that's like Denton. That's all growing up now. That's like, bam, that's worse. You know, they go from, like, since we've been here, they've built five new ISDs.
What's an ISD?
Like a whole independent school district. Not just five new schools, five whole ISDs. So, you know, multiple schools within each ISD.
That's growing. Well, Granbury, though, isn't Granbury growing? But Granbury, man, it's people know
about.
It's
a very slow, gradual
growth.
You wouldn't think so every once in a while. You're like, where are all these people coming from?
Yeah.
And, they're, you know, they're still building homes right across the golf course. I can look right out my window right now and look at homes going up.
I don't know. You might want to get a hold of the.
So I guess they're building like 144 new homes right over there, right over in that other area.
144 homes?
Whoa. Yeah.
That's not small, man. That's big.
Yeah, people are buying them.
Yeah. Four people to a home?
Yeah.
That's 400 more people in your community.
Hey, let me tell you a funny story real quick.
All right.
So, with the COPS program, you know, yes. Driving out. So the other night, last Wednesday,
You and George.
George and I were out that night, and I was driving, and we heard on the radio one of the officers pull over two motorcycles. And then all of a sudden, he came across and said, they're running.
Ooh.
And we were down the freeway a little bit more, and on the front road, and we saw the other motorcycle go down 377, just freaking screaming. Bow, ow. And so the second one they were giving chase to, he had no lights on and he was stuck in high gear. He was an easy target. So everybody, boom, took after him. So we're all in this following, going around. He goes around, does a loop. So we go looking, and then they lost sight of him. We were trying to find him. We were talking to some lady, and she was explaining to us what she had seen where he had gone through, and all the officers were chasing after him. And then he, because he had no light on, he went through, like, either the center median and came back the other way. So lost him, went back in towards Granbury. So George and I go back in towards Granbury, looking. And ultimately, the first motorcycle that got away clean, no one even went after that guy. I mean, we saw him briefly. He goes just on the outside of town, goes and parks his motorcycle at a bar that they rolled up on looking for the other guy. And he was in the bar, the first guy, so they arrested him. I was like, how stupid can you be, man? If you get away, this reminds me of a story where a young person driving a car in Prairie, Minnesota, thought he could get away from the police and then pulled into a dark driveway and forgot to take his foot off the brake. And as the officer came up and rapped on the window, I rolled down the window and said, "Yes, sir." And they said, trying to laugh, hysterically. And he said, "You know, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen." And he goes, "If you wouldn't have taken your foot off the brake, if you would have had your foot off the brake, I would have never seen you." And I was like, ah. And then my buddy's in the car, like, "Ah, you stupid ass, ah." I was like, oh. I would have never made a good getaway driver.
All right, do you want me to make your day? Do you want me to make your day?
Go ahead.
All right. This just popped into my email, Okay.
Uh-oh.
No, this is why it's so cool to do what we do. Sir, I just found your podcast yesterday and listened to the conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Cuomo intently. Enjoy his perspective of opportunity. Listening live now from the East Coast here in the swamps of North Carolina, where I retired a few years ago from our beloved Corps after 20 years of privileged service alongside some of the greatest men and Marines. This morning I started listening to your podcast with Colonel Kenny, retired. He was my company commander in Weapons Company 2-2. I spent a night or two on Lux Mound in the FSCC with a brilliant and funny Captain Kenny. Hearing you two speak of mortars, arty, elevation and deflection, whiz wheels and plotting boards brought much joy to my heart. He's an example of a great man, of the great men and Marines I speak of. Having been diagnosed with severe PTSD, my natural tendency was to withdraw upon my retirement. It's been a five-year fight to get back into life, and finding this podcast with your message of post-traumatic winning is damn near fate. So for what it's worth, from one leatherneck to another, thank you, sir. Respectfully submitted, Master Sergeant, United States Marine Corps, retired.
That's awesome.
Isn't it?
Isn't yeah. It? And I have the utmost respect for Master Sergeants, man. I love that rank. That's what I wanted to be. You know, if I would have made Master Sergeant, I would have never been a gunner. But the Marine Corps chose me to be a First Sergeant. After I put M's on my fitness report.
Why do they, like, who does that? I mean, I don't really understand what was happening.
Remember on the old fitness reports, you would put an F, you would put yours, and then the reviewing officer
would put his
comment. And that trumped mine. So everybody, all my battalion commanders were always like, oh, you'd be a great first sergeant. And, you know, and I didn't have a comeback for that until one day someone had said to me, said something like that. They heard someone say, oh, you'd be a great first sergeant. And they said, no, he'd be great at anything he does because that's just who he is. I was like, oh, I like that.
But part of greatness is wanting to do that job.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be a first sergeant. I mean, not a knock against first sergeants.
No, Hugging everybody. Say, come on,
yeah.
Come here,
come on, let me tell you what's your problems today? It's Monday morning. I know you have some problems over the weekend. You know?
Come here, baby. Put your head
up. I bought a Medal of Honor necklace for my girlfriend, and it was $300, but when I signed the contract, it was $39 a month for 10 years. It seemed like a good deal, with 27% interest, compounded.
And I talked to my friend. He said he didn't think it was stupid.
No. And then you look at the necklace, and it's plated 24-karat gold that's already coming off. And if you look real hard, you see it was made in Chena, Illinois.
You didn't want to deal with that the rest of your life?
Oh, I was like, because you're stupid. That's why you bought this necklace. Or you go to the, you know, when you tell young Marines, stay away from the car lots that say, we finance every pay grade. There should be alarm bells going off in your head. Oh, every pay grade? Why did they say that? We finance every pay grade. Or, you know, you meet a girl at a bar, and the first thing out of her mouth is, not what do you do, what's your rank, what's your pay grade? Oh, I'm an E2. She's like, cha-ching, I'm in. Because she's not smart enough to realize that Lance Corporal next to you is going to make a little bit more money. She's just worried about she's just looking for the retirement and the dental and the medical.
You know,
her four kids that she has support for debt.
That's a long ways away there, Princess. The, one of the things that I always found ironic when I was going to get out of the Marine Corps as a lieutenant because they augmented me and said I had to be a supply officer. I want to be a supply officer. I mean, I want to be a grunt. That's what I wanted. But you have all these people telling you, you need to stay in. It's important for you to be a Marine officer and for the good of the Marine Corps. And we need good. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You're not giving anything up though, right? Have you ever given up your MOS?
I don't see any skin in the game for you there, Mr. Chicken.
Exactly. Exactly. And I had a, and I remember I'd look at him and I'd say, well, how would you feel if you weren't going to do this anymore? You know, this is not a vocation. This is not the priesthood for me. You know, I didn't give my life to the Marine Corps and say, do what you will. There are a certain number of utils of satisfaction, to use an economics kind of thing, that I need to get back. And I don't think me loading your gear, waving you, and say, don't crash my truck is like something that I really want to do.
Right. Yeah, it's always the chicken telling the pig, don't worry about it. Breakfast ain't going to be so bad.
Yeah. You'll come on in. You'll love
it. You'll enjoy it. Breakfast is good. Wait a second. I'm committed, man. I'm the pig. You're not. You're just involved. There's a difference.
Yeah.
And he's always given the pig advice.
Yeah, but they would say, you know, because they were good dudes. They were like, you're right. And to be honest, I don't know how I feel if I was in your position. You know, I can see where you're, I can understand where you're at. I said, okay, then stop saying that to me because all it does is piss me off because you're not giving anything up. And when, you know, and most of us are giving up our careers as we see it. And there's guys who stayed in and became, you know, great MOS support guys and whatnot. But yeah, that was rough. That was rough.
It was good. It worked out.
Yeah. All right. What
so hey, Thursday I'm not going to be around. I'm going to be at the Elk Chili, the annual Elk Chili Law Enforcement First Responder Luncheon over at the Big Ranch.
Over
with Judge Massengill at the big house on the ranch.
All right. Well, maybe we can do something Wednesday night.
Yeah, we could tape some. Yeah,
we can get an update. General Zinni's coming on Friday.
What?
Exactly. Only to talk Iwo Jima, though, because he's a huge Iwo Jima guy.
I've been there.
And so I sent him an email. I said, hey, sir, would you want to come on and talk about Iwo Jima? And he's like, yes. He said, I can come on Friday. I said, all right, man, I will clear the decks. And so I'm excited because, I mean, he's a huge student, smart guy, obviously. And then as CEO of 9th Marines, he used to go over there every chance he got and crawl around the island. So kind of curious to hear what he has to say. So
yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, excited about that. Excited about that.
Yeah, just call me. Let me know what time.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right. Talk to you.
There you have it. The man, the myth, the legend, the one and only Michael Musselman. That'll do it on a Tuesday. If you're just joining us, don't touch that dial. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Como was my guest this morning. And interesting discussion with him. Yeah, so it's part two of our discussion with him. And by all means, and again, I think the really exciting part of this is the fact that this is where Pete Ellis, this is where the guys who built the Marine Corps for World War II stood in the 30s and the 20s. What was the threat and how did the Marine Corps need to be designed in order to, you know, be what the nation needed? Right, so the amphibious force was not needed in Europe, although they did amphibious operations there. It was needed in the Pacific, and that's how it was designed to be a national asset, and that it would grow far beyond anything that it knew, and right, and it would serve the nation in a way that in the 20s and the 30s, you know, most people could not even conceive of a Marine Corps of that size. And so it's that inspiration, right? That inspiration that is unique and exciting. It's the same thing that the Germans did. Again, I said it during the interview, but the Germans did the same thing with the tractor, the artillery piece, and the radio. And then they were initially seen as, you know, supporting infantry type of devices. And then after that, they were seen as, or at least the Germans conceived of them in a way that made them strategic assets. Those Panzer divisions rewrote military science when in 1940 they went into France. And in very short order, France, right? Impenetrable after World War I. The Maginot Line. All that? The French weren't having it again. The Germans drove around it. So, that's what I think, you know, again, this has been going on for a while. The lethality of modern munitions, the ability now to see. And then you say, okay, well, what if you poke their eyes out? All right, well, you know, if you look at satellite communications, one of the things that you see is that's resident in there is the ability to regenerate those, right? Regional satellites. I should probably do a show on that. Regional satellites, right? So anyway, that'll do it on a Tuesday. My guest tomorrow, this week is like cool. it's like way cool. So Jeff Kenny and Tim Lynch will join me tomorrow. And then on Friday, General Zinni's coming on to talk to Iwo Jima. On Thursday, Grant Newsham's coming on to talk about the summit and things going on in the Western Pacific. So another great week. Last week was awesome. The week before was awesome. And this week, awesome. So anyway, I want to thank the Master Sergeant who wrote that email a little bit ago. That is the purpose of All Marine Radio, is to give Marines a place to come and connect, to talk about things that are important to us, and also to spread the gospel of post-traumatic winning, that trauma does not have to be a gateway to a bad place, that if you learn about it, and if you can get your hands around it, and then you begin to use it and your experience to help other people, it can be a gateway to a greater life. And I know that because I've lived it. And now wherever I go, wherever I do that, my experience is that other people begin to live it too, and it's intoxicating. I got a text message from somebody who's never been in the Marine Corps, but enjoys the program, is a member of the tribe nonetheless, an extended member of the tribe, okay, but a member nonetheless, right? Here's a text I got from her. I met a young mother of two whose husband is an active Marine overseas. We had a long discussion about post-traumatic winning, and she said, "You're exactly what I needed in my life right now. I can't believe I met you. There are so many days that I can't handle being alone and want to die, and I live in fear of my husband dying. And you have just given me so much hope." After I told her it's okay to struggle, but she's not going to do it alone, she left Mexico a few days earlier, so I've reached out to her via phone to make sure she's okay. Her sister said she was just in awe of the things I said and hearing about All Marine Radio. So, how cool is that? And again, it just keeps happening on a daily basis. So, to the master sergeant, welcome. Your responsibility now is to learn more about it and touch other lives with it. And by changing other people's lives, you'll impact your own life in a way that you probably would never have thought of 3 weeks ago, 6 months ago, a year ago. But I promise you, it'll happen. So, with that said, welcome. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio is over and out.